Broadcasting from beautiful South Florida, welcome to another episode of Your First Thousand Clients, the show that focuses on how to create success first for yourself and then all the people in your world. Your First Thousand Clients is hosted by CEO advisor and best-selling author, Mitch Russo. Listen as Mitch and his inspiring guests share how to turn your hidden assets into a rich recurring revenue stream. Discover revenue streams you never had, increase continuity profits, and help you acquire extraordinary value for your company and family. And now, here's your host, Mitch Russo.
Welcome to this moment in time when you get to chill out, tune in, and extract wisdom that you could use to grow your business with your first thousand clients. So today, I have something special for all my coaches in the audience. You know, as a coach myself, I realized that I had been spending about 30 minutes per session on my admin because I had five applications open all at the same time, one for note-taking, calendar, spreadsheet, browser, Zoom, all my past session history scattered over two huge screens. And then at the end of every session, I had to combine all of that data after the session into a single email and send that to my client. Well, then when I had my next session with my client, I had to go digging for that email and try and remember what I did last time. It just became so much work that I decided to get myself some professional coaching software. And I searched and I tried and I actually tried out five different products. All of them were really complex. All of them did way more than I needed. And a lot of them were super expensive. So I did what all good entrepreneurs do when they face a problem that no one solved. I solved it and I built my own platform, and it's now available to you for just 20 bucks a month. And it's called Clientfolio, FOL.io. And I'm inviting you to test drive it for just a dollar. Take it for a whirl for 14 days. See if you love it. And if you do, you will be thrilled at how much time it saves you and enhance your results with your clients. So that's clientfol.io, Clientfolio. Give it a try today. Now on to my guest and his incredible story. David versus Goliath is a Bible story about how one young man with the strength and confidence of a giant defeated Goliath. Now, a story with biblical significance plays out in modern times with those daring to take on their own Goliath, hoping to slay their nemesis. Our guest today started his sales journey living in a tiny apartment with a pregnant wife, took the only sales job he could find, a commission one, selling tickets to the LA Clippers, which at the time was recognized by the NBA as the worst franchise in sports history. Well, you know, the glitz and glamour of the LA Lakers had the best players money could buy, and they drew all the press and attention, but the Clippers played in a rundown arena in a depressed part of town, and no one was going to the games. So my guest decided that nothing would stop him from making a living and supporting his new family. So he decided to start selling the benefits instead of the features, meaning he sold the results of going to a Clippers game. And when he did, he figured out the angle that worked best. And you know what happened? Yep, sales skyrocketed. And this became the beginning of his master process called results-centered selling. Follow along with us so you can learn how to be a sales game changer. Today, he has guided over 300 sports organizations worldwide and helped sales leaders all over the world maximize their outcome. He's also written a best-selling book, and he has an incredible story. And this is what we bring you today. Welcome, Rob Cornelis, to the show.
Thanks so much, Mitch. I actually enjoyed hearing my story.
So, makes you think back to the old days, right?
Do you believe that's 30 years ago now? That story that you just told took place. And that was, for those who follow sports, that's when the LA Clippers were a lousy team. Whereas today, they're a pretty good team, I've got to admit.
Well, you know, they're not as good as if you were still working with them, I'm sure. But you know, it does go to show, it's a lot of, I want to unpack a lot of that. And I want you to tell us your story in your own words. But I think for me, you know, this is really almost a classic tale of a hungry entrepreneur that just decides he's going to make it happen no matter what and choose through walls to do whatever it takes to get this going. So let's go back to the beginning and tell us really how this all started for you.
Well, you're right. It is, you know, I didn't know it at the time, but it is an underdog story. Because I just thought taking a job in the sports industry would be cool because you get to go to a lot of free games, right? And walk around the court and talk to the players. And it's kind of every, maybe not every young boy's dream, every young woman's dream, but it was for me. So I took the job just because of the cool factor. But then, you know, realizing that, hey, like you said, I've got a family to support. I knew that I had to become an adult. And an adult needs to figure out an adult way of selling this very difficult product that nobody wanted. Most people either thought that when I was calling them, a business or an individual, to enlist their support of the Clippers, they thought it was either a practical joke or that, you know, that I had misdialed. And a lot of people didn't even know who we were back then. This is, again, in the 1990s, early 1990s, I should say. And in fact, I had one woman when I called and I said, I'm with the LA Clippers. She said, I don't need a haircut. And she hung up on me, right? So, I mean, it was a very difficult first entry into the sales field. And I never wanted to be in sales. I never went to school to be a salesperson. Very few of us have. Very few of us grow up around the dining room table telling mom and dad, we're going to be a salesperson. But I figured that, you know what? I do have some people would call passion for this product. And I think it can do great things for companies and families and nonprofit organizations. The problem was, Mitch, everybody thought when I was calling them that I was trying to talk them into becoming a fan. And that wasn't my objective at all. What I was trying to help them understand is that whether they're a Lakers fan or a Dodgers fan or back in those days, an LA Raiders fan or a USC fan, it doesn't really matter to me. What matters is, does their business, does their nonprofit organization, does their family, does their circle of friends want a particular result or outcome, irrespective of my sports team, that my franchise can actually help produce or deliver to them? And when the answer in my mind was yes, because if you're a business, you want to grow sales, you want to retain customers, you want to grow your brand, you want to keep loyal employees happy and motivated and productive. And if you're a nonprofit organization, you want to promote your cause, you want to grow your membership, you want to raise more money. If you're an individual or a family, you want quality time, you want to save money, you want memories, you want better relationships with those people close to you. All of those, what I would call results, I discovered are achievable using a professional basketball team.
Well, I bet you at first, you know, you probably started out, and I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, trying basically to sell sponsorships or boxes or tickets. And later, as you evolved your sales process, you started to create this huge list of benefits that you could bring to an organization if, in fact, the pun played ball with you. So the idea here, of course, is that being involved in a sports team, even one that you at the time said was not very respectable, had some status. And no matter what, if you basically had a box at a stadium where you could bring customers or you could bring employees or you could bring executives or even colleagues, you have status no matter what. Isn't that kind of what you were selling?
Well, yes, there is some status. Now, people would argue with me that, well, I'll have more status by going to Dodger Stadium. What I would argue in those cases is that you should go to Dodger Stadium. If that's where you can get the outcomes or the results that are important to you and your business right now, go for it. However, it doesn't have to be exclusive to the Dodgers. After all, the Dodgers play in the summer, we play in the winter.
Right.
So we can be complementary. We could be a supplement to your relationship with the Dodgers, even if you're a Lakers fan. Mm-hmm. I used to be able to say back in those days, hey, Michael Jordan only comes into LA once a year. The other time he comes into the year, he only comes in once a year to play the Lakers. But the other time he comes into play, guess who he's competing against? My Clippers.
Wow.
So why not take advantage of his second appearance and come and use my games as another way of leveraging Michael Jordan to benefit your business? So again, it wasn't about turning people into fans, because that's a tall order when your team stinks. It was rather helping them understand that my product is a resource to you. And if you're looking at it as just a fun night out, you're kind of missing the boat. You're kind of, you're underutilizing the power of sports and what it can do. And so when I finally was able to find the right messaging for that, I started to make presentations. Obviously, conversations increased, and then sales followed.
And so at first, of course, you struggled, and then you figured out some of these things gradually. How long did it take for you to decode the way the world works around sales team sports? How long was it before you were finally at the point where you'd seen a real increase in revenue for the team and for yourself?
Well, when I first began, I started in the summertime of 1991. And for the first 90 days, I was getting a goose egg. There was nothing happening for me. But the reason for that, Mitch, is because I was selling the product, not the results of the product.
Right.
Because the product is objectionable, right? Bad team, lousy coach, dumb owner, barn of an arena, bad location, high prices, you name it. So you can sell product all day, but you're always going to meet objections. And who likes that? When I finally realized about 90 days into this, look, stop selling the product, Rob, because nobody really wants it. Nobody got up this morning asking for your product. But what they're always looking for, striving for, is the results that your product produces. So when I began to communicate this, I went in within a 1 month period, I went from essentially selling zero season tickets to in 30 days selling 83 season tickets. And it set a record at the Clippers. And the next month I sold 65 season tickets. And the next month I sold 72 season tickets. I was proving that this was not a lark. And I was not lying to people. I wasn't misleading people, because that wouldn't have, you know, I would have gotten cancellations all over the place. So eventually through this success, the Clippers said, hey, do you want to manage our sales team? I'd never managed anything before. And I'm new to sales, but I thought, well, sure, you know, why not try it? So I did. And I sat down with my colleagues, who were almost all of them hired about the same time I was. And I said, look, I don't know what you guys are saying to folks, but this is what I'm saying. And it seems to be moving the needle. I mean, just look at the board. So that's that year, that season as it was, at the end of it, we had gone from selling out three games the previous year before any of it had arrived. And that season, we sold out 14 games.
Fantastic.
And that's really the measurement, Mitch, of success in the sports world. Some people think it's banners hanging from the ceiling or trophies in the case. But in the business of sport, it's really how many sellouts are you creating? And when you can show consistent sellouts, that's business success in sports.
Of course. Well, you know, there's another part to this that I think you touched on briefly that's really important. It's one thing to figure it out and be able to close deals for yourself, but to train others, this is a whole nother level of skill. Did you start out when you became the manager, did you start out seeking out other leaders or other managers or other people who had done this before? Or did you just kind of, you know, blast your way through it and find your own pathway?
Probably because I wasn't very bright. I just created my own path. It's kind of like Ralph Waldo Emerson said. He said, don't follow the path others have created. Create your own path and leave a trail. And so that's kind of the philosophy that I assumed. Part of it was I didn't know where else to go to find help.
Right.
I was so new to the industry and so new to sales. And, you know, in the sports world, it's always, hey, you did a great job selling out that game last Saturday night, but you got another game on Tuesday. So you just got to keep moving. And so there was very little time to sit and think about the strategic approach. So I really just tried to, as quickly as I could, share with my colleagues my approach. But it's interesting you asked that question, because eventually I figured out a way or a system of training, and that eventually led to a business.
Of course. Well, you know, I can relate to your story personally. I was selling semiconductors in the 1980s. At first, I was a user of semiconductors. I was an engineer, and I would design circuits. But later, I transitioned to marketing and then to sales. And when I got the sales job, I had never sold before. And so what I did is I pitched myself on the strength of my engineering relationships. So it would have been as if you said, well, hey, look, I know all the guys, you know, on the team, and I could probably speak to them and get their friends and et cetera. And they say, oh, sure, give it a try. And they hired you. Well, for me, it was much different because I never even sold anything other than candy for my dad's business. So I went and I found the top salesman in my community, in my industry, and I took him to lunch. He was, by the way, an ex-NFL guy. His name was Kevin Hunt. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He's an old-time player. He didn't play very many seasons, but he got injured. And I said to Kevin, and I said, well, you're really good. You're doing this an incredible job. How did you learn how to sell? And he said, oh, I just drove over to the Dale Carnegie office on Totten Pond Road in Waltham, and I signed up for their sales course. And I said, oh, good. Okay, well, great. And then we had nothing else to talk about. It was like he had nothing else to tell me. So I, of course, went over and I signed up for the course too. But you had to figure it out. And I love that about it. Listeners, we're talking to the amazing Rob Kanellis, and he has created a system for helping people learn how to sell on a benefits-oriented basis. And we're about to share a lot of his wisdom today for you on this show. And every single word we say will be fully transcribed for you over at yourfirst1000clients.com. Go to Rob's show page. That's Rob Kanellis' show page. And there you will see every single word we said, including a very special free gift.
This episode of Your First 1,000 Clients is brought to you by VIA, the Virtual Entrepreneurs Association. All the tools, resources, discounts, education, and community to help you on your entrepreneurial mission. Think of VIA as the AAA or Swiss Army knife for business. From world-class education, cutting-edge learning and networking events all over the globe, an active community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and discounts on over 671,000 business, dining, travel, and entertainment options, the average VIA member saves hundreds of dollars a month on the things they use for their business and personal life while getting the education and support they need to grow their business. And for a limited time, you can get your free trial of VIA at viabusiness.com/Mitch. That's veabusiness.com/Mitch.
Now, Rob, you know at this point in the show what we're going to do. We're going to transition to masterclass mode. And I'm going to ask you, for everybody listening, how would you advise us on how to create an incredible sales proposition and then multiply that through the use of others in the organization?
Well, I appreciate you asking about a masterclass. In fact, we've created a masterclass. It's called the Sales Game Changer Masterclass.
Fantastic.
You know, I think I must go back to where we started this conversation, Mitch, and that is that the tendency of salespeople, and it's a tendency because we're trained this way when we get a sales job. We go off to onboarding and they give us sales training for a week or two or three, and they call it sales training, but you and I both know, in essence, it's more product training.
Right.
Here's the product. Here's the nuts and bolts and the widgets and the colors and the schemes and where it's manufactured. And so when a typical salesperson is trained and they've spent all this time learning about the product, what are they prone to do once they get back, once they get into the field? Well, obviously they're prone to talk product. Mm. And the problem with that is that when prospects wake up in the morning, when prospects go to work in the morning, they're not thinking about products that they're looking to purchase. They're thinking about results they're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So the first lesson that we teach in our masterclass, and the first thing I would want your listeners to know, is that you can stand out. You can be a true sales game changer if you'll put aside the mention or the discussion, the introduction of your product, and instead message the results, the positive results, the appealing and attractive results your product or service brings. Now, people may say, how do I know which of those results are going to be appealing or attractive to my prospect? It's very simple. irrespective of whatever you're selling right now, ask yourself, who is my target audience? And you might have many target audiences, or we say many avatars that you're selling to. That's great. What I would recommend you do is make a list of 10, 15, 20 different results that you suspect that your target markets are looking for every single day, whether or not your product exists. And so when you make that list, then you go back and ask yourself one by one, is my product or service a means, a tool, a resource by which this audience can achieve that or this result? When the answer is yes to any one of those 20, now you know what to message. Now you know what you're selling. You're selling to the result, not the product. The product is the means by which we'll get there together. So it's an amazing exercise, Mitch, because my experience, having trained tens of thousands of salespeople now over the years, is that when you make such a list, you'll be amazed that very few things on that list should be scratched off because they're irrelevant or unimportant to you, to your prospect. You'll find that all of these are important to them. And what do you know? My product in one way or another affects this result.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Well, I also would add that I would assume that part of your process would be, once you have this list, would be to start testing and start experimenting to see, well, which of these 20 things that I figured out has the highest appeal, which gets to yes fastest. Is that right?
Yes, we're trying to build agreement as quickly as possible.
Okay.
The fastest way to build agreement with a prospect is to talk about the results that matter to them, that they're thinking about, that they're talking about in their own staff meetings this morning. Mm-hmm. The fastest way to get to know is to talk about a product that right out of the gate, they find objectionable. So The tendency, again, is to talk about your product because that's what you were trained to do, but that's actually working against your interests.
Right.
Because I can object to your product every which way and Sunday. I can say it's too expensive. I can say it's too large. It's too small. Takes too long to deliver. I don't like the color. And the reasons go on and on and on. But when you tell me that your product or your service will actually assist me in gaining market share, as one example of a result, how can I object to that?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yep. So the other part of this is, and I'm going to now sort of segue a little bit into step two. Once you do get results, how do you feel about something I feel very strongly about? How do you feel about testimonials? Do you feel like testimonials play a role, or do you feel as if it's better to find those three key benefits and really hit those hard going in?
Great question, Mitch. What I would like to do is utilize both.
Okay.
So we have a little saying at GameFace: success stories sell. Mm-hmm. So it's the SSS rule: success stories sell. So you can talk about your product eventually all you want, but of course you're a self-serving salesperson.
Right.
So instead of having me talk about my product, I like to have other people talk about my product. And granted, I don't bring customers on sales calls with me. So what I will do is I will gather their testimonials and I will utilize those not only within the presentation itself or my deck or my pop-up or my promotional materials. I'll also use evidence of their successes even in my opening statement.
Great.
So I allude to another customer or client's successes that they're enjoying right now through my product and service, not that they enjoyed, because that sounds like they're not using me anymore.
Ah, good point.
But they're enjoying with us right now, that they're gaining from us, that they're seeing from us. You see, it's the ing words, not the ed words.
Mm.
And then I'll say they're enjoying, and then I'll fill in the blank with a result that I know this prospect would find attractive.
That makes a lot of sense. I'm going to see if I could push you just a little bit further on this. One of the things that I know when working with a client and closing a sale, a lot of people get hung up on the fact that they already sold that client something. And like when I work with a client, my rule is never sell anything unless you know exactly what you're going to sell them next. Do you build that into your process as well?
You know, it is a part of our process, and it's interesting you ask it in that way because it's kind of like a lawyer. Don't ask a question of the witness unless you are ready for their answer, right? So if you're going to sell something, you need to know how this relationship is going to evolve. And so where that comes for us is it comes through what we call the assessment process. So while we're assessing the prospect, we are beginning to collect valuable data points, what we call the four corners of assessment. And through these data points, or these four corners that we're collecting from them, we are building justification as to how and why they should say yes to us. Now, the justification to say yes could be just say yes to this initial offering that we're going to present momentarily.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that we don't have more justification for additional products and services. And yet it takes good judgment and it takes timing as to when to know the perfect opportunity to introduce those additional products and services. Is it in this initial meeting, or is it once they're starting to see results from the product or service that you attested to? And now that they've become convinced themselves and they're raving fans, now it's time to provide them evidence and justification that more products and services can multiply results for them.
Of course. So in the sports analogy of your business, that the way it comes to mind for me, and I'm sure you have many more than I could think of, once you sell them the box seat, once you sell them subscription, the season pass, if you will, next thing you might think about is maybe a sponsorship. Next thing you might think about is maybe a product placement. In other words, there are so many things that people can do, but sometimes don't. And I think it's important to identify what those are before going in, even to the initial meeting. Would you agree?
Absolutely. In fact, it's a term that we use at Gameface, Mitch. We call it the revenue escalator.
Great. I love that.
So the first step is that, to use the sports analogy or the sports industry for a moment.
Yeah.
In our business, we'd call it a 5-game mini plan.
Okay.
Right? Let's sell the Russo family a 5-game mini plan.
Yep.
Because it's simple. It's an edible bite, right? It doesn't take much effort or much expenditure on your part. And over the course of a 6-month season, what's 5 games, right? No big deal.
Right.
And then once you're on board with those 5 games, and you're loving it and you're getting the results that you and I agreed are important to you and your family, or you and your clients, or you and your colleagues, then the next time you and I visit, we're going to talk about that 10-game plan, or the 15-game plan, or the half-season plan, and then the season ticket. And then, the further up that revenue escalator is a suite, or corporate hospitality, or sponsorship. And so every industry, every company needs to be developing their own revenue escalator. And their salespeople, I love how you're framing it, their salespeople have to have that vision. As one person said to me many years ago, take a client as far as they can see, and when they get there, they'll see further.
Exactly. I love that. And of course, you know, what's also interesting is for the average person who's not involved in the sports industry, most people would never have even considered many of the things that you've just discussed that could be sold. So I would guess that in every industry, there's many, many options that somebody could potentially use to upsell, or I should say right sell, that client at the right time. Just as you said, when that vision appears at the end of the first rainbow, it's time to show them the second one, which is fantastic.
And, you know, in my case, Mitch, because we had such a bad product on the court and because everybody who talks about our product on sports talk radio or 24-hour news networks like ESPN or sections of newspapers dedicated to nothing but sports, because everyone's just talking about my product, it was so difficult at first to have conversations with the market, the LA community, saying, let's stop talking about the product for a moment. Let's stop talking about what you heard on your drive into work today. Let's instead talk about your business and how our venue, our organization, our brand can assist you in driving your business forward, in setting you apart from your competition, in recruiting even better talent to your team. Because we have ways in which you could utilize our games, our venue, our association to drive those important outcomes or results for your company. And so once we started to have these conversations, people looked at us in a whole, looked at us in a whole new light. And I can't see why that wouldn't be applicable in any industry or any company. If you're Apple, what are you known for? You're known for cell phones, right? Maybe laptops or whatever. But there's more, right? There's more to Apple than that. And there should be more to every company. I'd even say to a restaurateur, are you just known for sandwiches? I would argue no. You're not just known for great sandwiches. There are other results you bring to people who frequent your restaurant. What are those, and what are you? How are you selling those items, those results?
So Rob, this is a wake-up call for, I think, for everybody. I think everybody listening to the show should have been making notes. And again, luckily for you, there's a full transcription available for you. And you could, of course, replay the episode anytime you want. But this is really a wake-up call to any business. And like Rob just said, Rob, I'm just repeating what you said about an example, a restaurant. All people really do who own restaurants is advertise what's on the menu. There's so much more that could be sold that normally isn't even considered. Sure, food is the center point or a centerpiece of what you do, but there's the venue, there's signage, there's sponsorships, there's parties, there's events, there's catering, there's all these things that I think any business has available to them as options that most people, they get into groove and that's all they think about and that's all they do. And that's why I'm so glad we're getting a chance to talk today, because this really is a mind warping experience for me, because it really makes me think about all the things that potentially can be sold for almost every and any business.
Well, Mitch, those are very kind words. Thank you. And it really is, at the risk of hyperbole, it's a game-changing way at looking at sales. It's a game-changing way at looking at your own product or service. An easy example would be, for example, those in the automobile industry, right? When you see an auto ad, an ad for a car, it's, you know, it's racing down the freeway or it's set atop a nice mountaintop and it's beautiful with the sunset. But the question I would ask those who are selling autos is, what are the results your buyers are looking for? And it's not just, I want to save money on gas. That's one result. Great, saving money. But there are other results people are looking for, most of the time unsaid, and they will not admit to it. But if a well-trained salesperson on that dealership lot will ask a customer, what are the results your family's looking for in your next vehicle, and know how to drive down into that question, that's what you then sell to. And don't sell the product, because I can tell you, as I said, all kinds of reasons why your product is fallible. I can tell you why it's not right for me. But when you start talking about results, boy, that accomplishes agreement very quickly.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned cars. It had been brought to my attention by someone many years ago that if you watch car commercials, they're really, really good at this. And, you know, they have huge budgets and it's very critical that they don't leave anything on the table. So if they're spending $1 million on an ad, they want to make sure they're hitting about every key point that every potential client might want. But here's the most interesting thing that I learned. I learned that most people like the way others see them because of the car they drive. So if you watch commercials, you will see crowds of people turning to look at the driver in that car. And I've, since he told me that, almost every car commercial seems to show others looking at them. But if you think about it, that is not the reason somebody would say that they're buying a car. So it requires this understanding, a deep understanding of your client. And I think that's what someone like you had to uncover in order to be able to sell a team like the Clippers at the time that you did.
Yeah. And it goes back to, what are the right questions? The questions that you ask have to lead you and the customer, not because you're manipulating them, but because you're trying to define them in your mind. It has to lead you to the same conclusion that the results that matter most to them, that are most valuable to their enterprise, are results that your product or service can help achieve or accomplish for them. And once that understanding takes place, selling becomes so much more enjoyable. It's so much more interactive. It's not just you pitching, which is, by the way, a word that as people who read my book, The Sales Game Changer, will learn, there are many, many words we use in sales that I recommend we stop using because it just groups us with the stereotypical salesperson that most people abhor and want to avoid. So we don't pitch, we present. What are we presenting? We're presenting something that's justifiable in their mind because it's getting them the results they just told us matter most to them.
That's right. As the saying goes, sales isn't something that you do to somebody. It's something that you do for somebody. And I think everything you teach really completely supports that viewpoint.
Just a quick example of what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Another word that we just discard and we say we're not going to use it anymore. And this is one that really rankles some salespeople at first because it's so ingrained in our lexicon. The word is closing. We don't close customers. We don't close clients. We open up relationships. When I get an order, when I get a contract signed, I didn't close anything because in the buyer's mind, it's not the end of anything. For them, it's the beginning of everything. It's the beginning for them. It's the beginning of results. So in the salesperson's mind, if we look at this as the close, then we are definitely on opposite sides of the fence or opposite sides of the table with our client. Instead, we're opening a relationship. We're launching results. And so again, the vernacular that we use, even if it's just internal, is sending messages to our brains in how we're going about selling. And so we need to be very cognizant of the language and the lexicon that we're incorporating. And we've got several suggestions on how we can change that lexicon to be more results-centered and less product-centric.
Well, we're going to get into that in a minute, but right now we're going to transition to a different part of the show, part that I like the most. And that's the part where I ask you a couple of questions that I ask every single guest since the beginning of the show. And the reason I ask these questions, in case somebody's listening for the first time, is because I find that these questions help me and hopefully help you get to know my guest a whole lot better. Rob, so these are the questions that we use to get to know you. So if you need a minute to think about it, that's all fine. But here's the first question. Who in all of space and time would you like to have 1 hour to enjoy a walk in the park, a quick lunch, or an intense conversation with?
I do know that question you ask it because I'm a listener of your show. And so I did think about that. And okay, of course, I was racing through a bunch of names. So it's really an unfair question, Mitch. How dare you limit it to one person? But I'll actually go back to the name I already mentioned earlier, and that is Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Mm.
I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with him. We've all heard his name, of course, and we are probably familiar with many of his quotes, but we didn't know it was attributable to him. He was an American philosopher in the 1800s. He's born in 1803, died in the 1880s. He is such a thinker about an assortment of subject matters, from religion to race to business to philosophy to human nature to education. I know of an account where he actually met with my great-great-great-grandfather. And I would love to have been in that room to hear what those two were saying and to hear that one encounter they had together by appointment, I would add. It wasn't a chance meeting. It was by appointment. I love his approach. One of the things that he has said among thousands that I've always remembered, and I think this is good for salespeople and entrepreneurs to keep in mind. He says that common sense, that what is most astonishing to man is common sense and plain dealing, right? So as a salesperson, as an entrepreneur, as a boss, if you can just use common sense in your interactions with customers, with colleagues, with new hires, and if you can be plain dealing with them, meaning you can shoot straight with them, that amazes and astonishes people because it seems to be so rare. And so as a sales game changer myself, I'm always just trying to use common sense with people because that's what good selling is. It's intuitive if you do it right. If you're trying to, if it's not feeling intuitive to you, you're probably caught up in too much technique.
Mm.
And you're doing it with integrity. So if I could just bend his ear for an hour, Boy, that would be a rich, rich experience.
Well, you know, if I could set that up for you, would you allow me to come along and be a fly on the wall and listen in?
Absolutely.
All right. Yes, sounds good. So here's the grand finale. This is the change the world question. And, you know, in some cases, I kind of know in advance what the answer might be. And in your case, I think I do. So let's find out. So what is it that you are doing or would like to do that truly has the potential to literally change the world?
Well, it is probably a pretty predictable answer based on what I've said so far, Mitch. So
yes.
Sorry for the repetition. The way that I think I can best change the world is change the way in which we interact with people in a commercial environment. The way that salespeople engage and then serve their customers. If they can put aside the self-serving notion of I have a product to sell and a quota to hit, and so I need you to hear my pitch. Instead, I'm calling, as you said it in the introduction, I'm calling to benefit you. The reason I got up this morning is to try to benefit another person. And if I can do it through my products and services, that will be my reward for the day. And yes, I'll get a paycheck for it, but that is how we'll change the world, is if we stop taking the stereotypical approach to selling and we make it more intuitive, we make it more person-centric and not product-centric.
Basically, some good old plain dealing is the simplest way to put it. And Ralph himself did such a good job of explaining that. Now, Rob, you have offered kind of an extraordinary free gift. Usually, we don't get folks who offer this. And so I'd like for you to describe what it is you're offering listeners of this show.
I'm happy to. And I have not made this offer to other podcasts that I've been fortunate enough to be on, Mitch, but I'm doing this with you because of our relationship and because of the good that you do for folks all over the world. So what I'm offering for those who might be interested is one of two gifts that they can take advantage of. The first is the audio version of my best-selling book, The Sales Game Changer, is coming out later this year, 2021. And I will offer anyone who sends me an email a free copy, a free download of the audiobook. Or if this is more appealing or valuable to someone, I'm going to be providing a free 30-minute consult to any individual or company that would like to dig further into their sales approach, their salespeople, their market, and how the game-face methodology, the sales game-changing way of selling, could complement what they're doing well and take them literally to the proverbial next level. So all they have to do is send me a personal email. And I'm giving out my personal email address today, which is RYC. Those are my initials, RYC@GameFaceInc. That's GameFaceInc.com. And in the subject line, I want you to put Mitch Russo. That's the key word, Mitch Russo, in the subject line. And if you'll send me that email and let me know which of those two you would prefer, we will be back in touch with you and make those arrangements with you.
Rob, that is an extraordinary gift. And to think about all of the guests that I've had and all of the shows you've been on and all the times that you've had a chance to present, I feel honored that you chose my show to do this. And listeners, I mean, if you don't take advantage of this, then, you know, maybe you should find another podcast, because honestly, it doesn't get any better than this. This guy's the professional. He is the real deal. And you need to speak to him if you have a sales organization. Rob, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you, as I always do, and how much I enjoyed our conversation today. So thank you again for spending the time with us today. Thank you for the education. Everyone, please do the work. You just got an incredible lesson on how to figure out exactly what it is that you need to do in order to benefit the clients that you work with. Don't let that go. Rob, thank you again.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Mitch. And sell well, everybody.